City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking in the second part of our program about neuronutrition and utilizing the fundamental cellular functions to advance healing for serious illnesses. So we have a lot we can do for our brain and our body. We have a physician, one of the leading ones in France, into our studios today. He is the founding member of the Institute of Applied Neuronutrition and Neurosciences in Paris. That'll be an interesting discussion. Also, the latest on what happens when you're taking that sugar. I started yesterday on our sister station, WPFW in Washington, to talk about this new study. I'll continue that today because there's more information. Also, from our issues, is America the most materialistic society in the history of the world, and what does it mean if we are? We could say, so what? Too bad for you if you don't. Or we could say, why do we need all this? It's just stuff. Our commentary today will be from Chris Hedges from TruthDig, How Do You Take Your Poison? So we have a full show. Let's begin. On yesterday's program, I mentioned that a new study out of Harvard showed that when you have a lot of sugar in the diet, especially fructose, it could impact the DNA. And therefore, they suggest that we need, of course, more studies. I suggested that shame on Harvard and other people that do these studies. We are the fattest nation in the world. We are the sickest nation per population in the world. We spend more money on health care in the world. This year, it'll hit $3 trillion. Put that in perspective, that's three times more than the entire military-industrial complex. And yet, with all of our doctors, nurses, hospitals, with all of our medicines, with all of our treatments and programs, we're not preventing anything. So our health care program doesn't give us better health. Do we really need another study, Harvard? Do we? To figure out that some things, the way we're consuming them and how much and quantity, that it's causing disease? I don't think we need another study. I think we have, what, about, according to the scientific literature I saw yesterday, over 700 studies from peer-reviewed literature, including four done at Harvard, showing what happens when you consume the average American diet, especially refined carbohydrates. So here's the issue. Are we ever going to be honest enough to say what causes illness? See, that's the mystery. It's the genes. Autism, it's the genes. Cancer, it's the genes. To resolve this issue, I flew out to San Francisco a couple weeks ago, and I filmed Bruce Lipton. Professor Lipton is the person who originated the concept of epigenetics, that you are more than your gene, that the gene is really only going to be positive or negatively influenced by what you expose it to. So good food, good genes, bad food, bad genes, or making genes bad. Now, what if you do have some predisposition? Then if a bad diet on top of a predisposition, then there's a higher likelihood that that will express itself in a negative way. But what if you have a bad predisposition, but you do everything right? Then, as he said, you're going to have a 97% opportunity to see a healthy life. Now, anyone who has an obese child or a teenager or themselves are fat, they know how they got that way. It wasn't genetic. It was because of a lack of exercise and an abundance of calories, more than what our body requires. So I tried to figure this out yesterday afternoon, and I simply asked a question. Why are all these people afraid simply to come out and tell the truth? And the answer is simple, at least from my perspective. The truth is always simple. It's how we deal with it or are unable to deal with it that becomes complicated. If the Surgeon General and the head of U.S. Public Health Service that oversee all of our health departments and the National Cancer Institute and the FDA and all these agencies, if they were simply to make a list of what we can prove from the scientific literature are contributing to diseases, then probably half of everything we do in America would be promoting disease. Watching TV 28 hours a week, very sedentary lifestyle, disease. Eating a lot of excess calories, disease, shortening lifespan. Eating calories that are highly processed and cooked at high temperatures, disease, acrylamides and heterocycloamines. Eating far more sugar than what the body's pancreas can process and insulin in amounts that would allow that sugar to get into the cells. High fructose corn syrup, glucose, sucrose, hidden different types of sugars. Disease, soft drinks, disease, caffeinated beverages, disease. Overeating in a meal, disease. Starving ourselves and then eating too much at one time, disease. Highly stressed lifestyles, disease. Inappropriate responses to stress, disease. A lot of the medications, the side effects of the medications, disease. Living in environments or working environments that are polluted, disease. So where's the confusion? Why should we not have a very healthy nation if we have a consciousness of what causes it? We simply eliminate it. And do we know what causes health? Oh, yeah. There's over 6,000 studies on what causes health, and these are in the peer-reviewed literature, but there's over 500,000 studies just on the chemistry, the positive effects, and the dosage range, and the safety of vitamins and minerals alone. So we don't need any more studies to know what to do to live a long and healthy life. But understand what happens when you're in a position of power. First, as long as you say that you want a research grant to look for something that's important, you'll get it if you're in that circle. And they can live their whole lives off the public dole doing research that never contributes to anything. In fact, you'll find the same type of study time and time again. You think, well, we've already been down this road. We've discovered this. Let's get into a different direction. That won't happen. Then you have the politicians. Why can't the President of the United States just come out and say, I've looked at all the scientific literature. I've had an independent group of scientists unaffiliated with any industry look at all the causes of disease and the best ways of approaching them. And I'm going to ask you to understand that you have a right of freedom of choice to go to McDonald's and have their hamburgers and go to someplace, have their pizzas and their french fries and the colas and all this other stuff. But you're contributing to disease when you do it. The choice is yours. Here's what we know contributes to wellness, and show that. Ah, and then you start realizing what's the truth is easy. You know, there's no complication of what causes disease. The problem is, what's it going to cost you to tell the truth? What do you mean? Well, there's a price. If you start saying that a hamburger causes disease, are you aware of how many times you see ads on a day on all the networks, including cable, for hamburgers and pizzas and beer and for illnesses? Take the sleeping aid. Oh, and you can die. Well, what if we just told the truth? Well, then advertising would dry up. Magazines wouldn't be able to publish, newspapers the same, radio and television the same. A lot of the bloviators on the left and right wouldn't have the sponsors, and hence they wouldn't be getting paid the big bucks, and they're not about to do community radio like the rest of us do because they're superstars. So that's what it came to. So let me add one more grain of sugar onto this humongous pile. This also is from Harvard School of Public Health. Quote, researchers from Harvard School of Public Health have found the greater consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages is linked with a greater genetic susceptibility to high body mass index and increased risk of obesity. That was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. You think? Wow. Isn't it great? Isn't it great to know that you could go to Harvard and end up with an education or do research to tell people lots of sugar might cause, we're not sure, we can't be absolute, where it may be. Is that the same as cigarettes? Absolutely. Cigarettes may, maybe not, cause some illness, not sure, no new studies, more studies. What's it take to get into Harvard? Let's just hear something now about what's necessary to get into Harvard. I think you'll find this interesting. Then we'll come back with more on health and nutrition information. and then my guest, who's standing by in studio.
So you want to go to Harvard? Welcome to our little university in Boston. We will have an hour to speak about Harvard. Then I will send a letter to the admissions office, which will have no effect on your application unless it involves money.
Thanks for taking the time to see me. I'm like a little nervous. I have only had a few interviews so far.
Where have you interviewed so far?
My college counselors at the Exeter Academy told me to limit my choices, so I have only been to Yale, Princeton, Stanford, MIT, Brown, Columbia, University of Pennsylvania, Cornell, Amherst, Middlebury, and Williams.
Well, I see you have saved the best for last, so why are we last?
Harvard is Harvard. You get into Harvard, you go to Harvard. So I wanted to be prepared for my interview.
I see your 10-page resume in front of me. Let's forget it and have you tell me about yourself so I can get to know you as a person.
Sure, I was born in Queens.
Did your father graduate from Harvard?
He went to New York University, then received his master's in business administration from Harvard.
So I assume he went to work at Goldman Sachs after Harvard.
No, he is the only member of his graduating class not to go to Goldman Sachs.
How do you expect to get in?
I work hard and have achieved quite a bit at a young age.
Tell me more.
I take all honors courses and have a 5.0 grade point average.
Keep going.
I achieved 800 on my college boards.
So what? We could fill every admission slots with geeks like you. So tell me, what is unique about you?
I play the violin. I am the youngest member ever of the Boston Symphony, and I had a solo performance at Carnegie Hall.
Okay, you sound just like the other 10 kids I interviewed this week. Tell me a reason we should admit you to Harvard.
My father is John Paulson.
Welcome to Harvard.
John Paulson, if you remember, is one of the most powerful, wealthy men in the world. Now, there was a little thing in there. You go from Harvard to Goldman Sachs. Well, we know what Goldman Sachs as a culture is, and we know what their interest is. It's greed. And we know that the best and brightest go there. The young people out to show what they can do with all that time and energy and discipline that they've earned up through their graduation from Harvard. So what does it take to go to Goldman Sachs? What if you just want to be a regular person and work at Goldman Sachs?
Welcome to the City Careers Service. How can I help you today? The Goldman Sachs. I want to work for the Goldman Sachs. Give me a job at the Goldman Sachs. Well, it is really competitive there. Why don't you try somewhere else like UBS? What is that? Is that the Goldman Sachs? No, it is a Swiss bank. It is similar to Goldman Sachs, but pays a bigger salary. I don't care. The hours are shorter. I don't care. They treat their employees better. I don't care. They don't require you to get up at 5 a.m. to go into the office. I don't care. You won't need to take crack cocaine to get through the day. I don't care. You get a limousine to pick you up for work every day. I don't care. You get a mansion with 5 servants and 3 chefs who can cook you anything you ever care to eat. I don't care. You can retire after 1 year and get a $50 million yearly pension, then you can go work for the Goldman Sachs. I don't care. And you will become motherfucking immortal. I don't care about any of that. Then, what the hell entices you to Goldman Sachs, if you don't mind me asking? Because it is the Goldman Sachs. But you do realize it doesn't mean anything. It is just a name. They could start a f***ing sweatshop that makes handbags, and call it the Goldman Sachs, if they wanted to. Yes, but it is the best bank. Can you explain how? I can work as a banker. So f*** what? You can work in NatWest and handle deposits and withdrawals, and call yourself a banker. I can work on M&A deals, and IPOs. What the f*** do you even know what they are? No, listen, their application deadline has already passed. If you don't mind working as a cleaner, I can take your CV. Sorry, I did not bring a copy of my CV. Are you serious? Are you so goddamn stupid that you expect to get a job at the Goldman Sachs by walking into the careers service after the deadline without your CV and no clue about the job? Dude, just give me a job at the Goldman Sachs. I think I'm going to quit my job right now and become a physicist so I can invent a time machine and go back in time to drown people like you immediately after birth. Yes, I will do that now. After you have done it, can you give me a job at the Goldman Sachs? I give up. You are not going to get a job anywhere. Get the f*** out of here right now, before I cut you into pieces with a chainsaw. Can the contract guarantee a pay rise after the first year? What about a sign-up bonus? Do I get free meals and taxis home? Hello?
That's just the other side of Goldman Sachs. If you're just joining us, I'm Gary Nall. A little bit more on health and nutrition today. A diet high in total antioxidants is associated with a lower risk of myocardial infarction in women. This is from the American Journal of Medicine, and I'll quote it. It says, coronary heart disease is a major cause of death in women. A new study has found that a diet rich in antioxidants, mainly from fruits and vegetables, can significantly reduce the risk of myocardial infarction. Quote, our study was the first to look at the effect of all dietary antioxidants in relation to myocardial infarction. Total antioxidant capacity measures in a single value all antioxidants present in the diet and synergistic effects between them, end quote. They studied 32,000 women for this study, and they measured the what is called ORAC. Now, people in this audience know ORAC is the oxygen radical absorption capacity of most common foods. And what that means is when you eat a food, you're getting a certain amount of ORAC or antioxidants in it. The average person probably gets in the neighborhood of 300 to 1,000 a day. I know many people in this audience are doing 10, 20, or 30,000 a day, meaning they're flooding their body with antioxidants from natural sources all day long. So that protects your cells, and that helps your cells live a longer life without mutations. All good. So it's good that they're saying it's the antioxidants that could help people. Now, where do you get your antioxidants? Well, the most part is going to be from fruits and vegetables. So we're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. No, the average American teenager eats one serving a day only because in the Reagan administration they made ketchup and a serving. So we're creating all the free radicals that lead to disease of the cell and oxidative stress, and we're not taking the antioxidants to protect the cell and allow it to live disease-free. From the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, a major study shows from the Aarhus University Hospital in Denmark that vitamin D with calcium reduces death in elderly. So this is very important. If you're taking vitamin D alone or calcium alone, it's not the right way to take it. Take the two together, and it will reduce your chance of death if you're a senior citizen. Quote, this is the largest study ever performed on effects of calcium vitamin D on mortality. Our results showed reduced death in elderly patients using vitamin D in combination with calcium. End quote. I would suggest 1,000 milligrams of vitamin D from citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, and 3 to 5,000 units of vitamin D3. And finally, concluding up here, work stress raises heart risk. This is important from the BBC, from James Gallagher, and it says, having a highly demanding job, but little control over it, could be a deadly combination. There was an analysis done of 13 existing European studies on 200,000 people that found that job strain increased your risk of a heart attack and death by 23%. Wow. Boy, those of you working in some non-commercial radio stations, you're lucky to be alive. The British Heart Foundation said how people reacted to work stress was key. Job strain is a type of stress. The research from the University College London said when you're working and you have no control over the outcome of what you do and you don't have people paying attention to you, you're more likely to have a heart attack and die. Well, that's comforting to know. I'm Gary Nall. And by the way, if you're still up for eating genetically modified food after yesterday's tape, this is the latest. This is from Sean Cowan, the West Australian. Genetically modified crop would cause liver failure. Now, this is a world-renowned scientist, and he's warned that one of the genetically modified wheat varieties has the potential to cause a deadly disease that attacks the liver. In his report on GM wheat that is expected to be released today, New Zealand geneticist lecturer Jack Heineman, the University of Canterbury, talked about how this particular enzyme in the wheat was similar to a human enzyme that produces glycogen. And the humans eating the wheat could find the technological gene suppresses glycogen production in their own bodies. That is definitely going to lead to liver failure. So this was also looked at by Flinders University biochemist Judy Carman and molecular geneticist Michael Antoniou from King's College London, and they concurred. One more reason why not to have genetically modified foods. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to have a commentary, issues, that's coming up. Our guest is next, but before we go to our guest who is standing by, and let me just welcome him to our program in our studios. He is Dr. Jan Roger from France, from Paris. He's a medical doctor, and he's devoted 30 years practicing medicine while researching the intersection of body, mind, nutrition, and the immune system, particularly as it applies to cancer and other degenerative diseases. And he is the founding member of the Institute for Applied Neuronutrition and Neurosciences in France. He's created a program called the Delta Medicine Program for patients to use alongside either conventional or alternative therapies. And we're going to get to that in a moment. Nice to have you with us today. And we're going to speak with him. But before we do, I see that Jason is in studio. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good afternoon, Gary.
What would you like to share with us?
I was just going through some things on the computer today, and I figured I would just tell you about another milestone we hit here at Progressive Radio Network. I was going through the Google Analytics, and I noticed over 5,000 people joined us on Monday alone, unique people who had just joined PRN for the first time. And at this rate, Gary, people joining us over the internet in 1 year will be over 1.5 million listeners coming to us. And our research through the Google Analytics has showed us that women, 35 to 45, college educated, very into environment, politics, what's going on in the economy, are the people who are coming at a growing and rapid rate. And which even adds to the other great news is that in 1 month in BAI, our listenership went up 125%. At this rate, Gary, you on the internet is just outstanding, and it's really breaking records in progressive radio everywhere. And I just thought I'd mention it.
appreciate that input. I'm not looking to those figures. The last figure I saw was a letter from Voice America, where that's just one of hundreds of places that take the show that they had of this show, 10 million monthly listeners. So if we get 1.5 million on this particular station, new, younger, dynamic, socially motivated people, that is all helping the causes out there. And that's what I look at. These are more people to find the issues, address them, and become a part of social movements. So we're happy that word of mouth is spreading. Now let's go and say hello to the good doctor. Nice to have you with us today.
Hello.
I would like to begin with the idea of neuronutrition, since you are the founder of the Institute in Europe and the focus on this modality of health.
That's right.
Now, it's a term that most listeners will not be familiar with, so please begin by defining neuronutrition and its basic principles, and also include your research and observations in the relationship of our mind and emotions and the immunological and hormone systems.
Oh, first, thank you for welcoming me in your country and into nice talk. And sorry for my deep French accent, but I will try to do my best. Yes, it's a very, very, very large and wide subject. And really, as you said, Delta Medicine, it's the name of a program. And it's based on applied neuroscience. It means some practical tools, health tools, to help people with chronic disease. And you have pointed out that mainly there is also neuronutrition. And it's very important to understand that we are not exactly a very common sentence. We are what we are eating. it's not exactly right. We are what we are absorbing and we are digesting. And all our digestive process are mainly under our nervous system and hormonal system control. And I add something very important, and maybe we will speak about that later, under the authority of our emotional system. And it's proven now by a lot of works in neuroscience, because all the human beings, all the, excuse me, the term, the things which are human and living, are really based on five living factors. And everybody now worldwide in the university admit that it's really the base of neuroscience. Everybody is breathing, eating, everybody knows that, protecting by detox, immune system or hormonal system, and thinking, it's a sentence, I think, therefore I am. And last one, last factors, living factors, it's all the feeling emotion, all the emotional system. And the neuroscience say that if you want to be globally healthy, and mainly if you have chronic disease, and if you want to recover your global health, you have not only to act on one factor. For example, people said, oh, I'm sick, I will change my diet and I will heal myself like that. Maybe it can help, obviously. Or some people maybe meditate and take care of their breathing system. And other people said, oh, me, I trust only in medicines. It's the third factors, immune and hormonal system. It's the targeting point for all the medicines, the hospital medicines. And other people think, for example, oh, me, I have an idea. I will cure my chronic disease or my cancer with psychoanalysis. And sometimes people said, because I have had a psychoanalysis, I have cured my cancer. Everybody is right, but everybody is not completely right. And all the people on this planet, on the Earth, are just under the control and the balance between these five living factors. And if you don't care about these five factors, you miss something at your cell level, at the balance of your cell level. And it's exactly what my works and of research and my book want to point out. It's just to educate people and to maybe to have the opportunity to express this very new idea for public, that these five factors are deeply linked and we have to act on each of them if you want to have a global health and if you want to boost your self-healing process inside of you.
Good. That was certainly understandable, and it makes common sense. We look at it the same way here. I don't have a diet that I offer people because everyone's different. Instead, I look for how to recreate balance. And each of the things you mentioned are simply pieces of the puzzle.
Yes.
Vitamin C that Linus Pauling gave us, a piece. Macrobiotics, not all the macrobiotics, but eating seasonally and locally grown and organic, that's a piece. Raw food, that's a piece. But there are thousands of pieces. Meditation, yoga, taking your time, mindfulness. All these are pieces. The trouble is it's very complicated for the average person. They want it simple. And the marketing teams out there and the authors, and I don't blame the authors necessarily, because the publishers have more control than the author more often than not. And they'll say, I have a good diet. And they look at it and the editor says, too complicated.
That's right.
People are not going to follow it. You're asking people to do too many things. Give them one thing. That's how all marketing is done in America today. One thing. And this flows back, and I'm going to ask you what your 5 points are in just 1 second, but there was a gentleman back in the 1930s and 40s who was the father of all public relations in the United States. He would hold office every day in his apartment in the Pierre Hotel, looking out over the Central Park, and people came from all over to see him. Why? Because he said this. He said, it is not about telling someone that they need to buy the dress or the car or food. Rather, how they will feel when they do. So if you put someone in a car and make them feel that this is just wonderful how I feel, or a dress or a type of cigarette, get them to associate their comfort and their feeling an image. You've created an image of what it means to buy something. And that was a point when Americans no longer looked at reality in the same way. They needed then, from then on, to be convinced that whatever they purchased would make them feel better. So everybody then began to sell things to people and market to people as if we're dealing with a person that cannot make an independent choice based upon the truth of any issue. So we have to sell them illusion. So if we gave the illusion that the high-protein diet, Dr. Atkins' diet, the most popular diet in American history, that's all they needed to do. But it also contributed to their death and disease and fatigue because it was all meat all the time and all fat all the time. But it was the illusion. It's simple. I don't have to do a lot. I can continue eating the bad food I love. All I have to do is eat more of it and create ketones. So that is the backdrop to which you and many other innovative and inspiring people have to realize that in the United States, at least, and I can't speak for France or other places, but I can for the United States, the truth is the last thing that we look for. Our comfort in reinforcing our feelings and the illusions of what we have embraced, that is what we will buy. With that in mind, would you now take us through the 5 points of the fundamentals of your program?
Yes, but I have an idea very... When I'm listening to you, you have said something very important. To have the illusion or the reality sometimes to feel better. And it's very interesting because really, this all the human beings are just between, in the just middle of a very specific scale. It's a balance between, in one part, some neurotransmitter called serotonin and dopamine, meaning these two neurotransmitter mean everything is okay. I feel very comfortable and it's my life is good. And the other one, it's in the other on the other tray of the scale, it's adrenaline and cortisol, and these two hormones means I'm answering to a stress. And to have a good life, it's to find the right balance between these two couple of hormones. That's the reason why I call this program Delta Medicine, because you are very, very right when you say nobody really wants to change dramatically his life or to change a lot of things because it's too hard to complicate and you cannot have a social normal life and it's too complicated. And we have, we realize with my team of research that you can really propose health tools to person if they can integrate very easily in their life. And delta means in science, a small amount of some things. It means delta breathing. It's the health tool with the breathing training. Delta eating, something like that, means you have only to do a small effort, the best one, because I have selected, not I, but all my team with me, we have selected the best of the research worldwide and the more simple tools to propose to the patients and people suffering from chronic disease. It means everybody is able to integrate this health tool in his life without disbalancing his social life, something like that. Very easy training of breathing 2 times 10 minutes every day. In for eating, for example, you have thousands and thousands advices on internet, etc. We have selected 5 to 10 main targeted points to have a healthy diet. The same for detox, the same for managing your stress. And the 5th point, so important, a very specific tool to rebalance your emotional system. It was the hardest point because it's very hard to understand that your emotions are deeply, deeply involved and have a deep link on your immune and hormonal system. And it took 10 years to create this very specific tool with 10 different specialties. And I'm very, very proud of this fifth tool because the other one exists before Delta Medicine. This one, it's more specific. It's a new one. And really, it can, we have the experience of 10 years, it can change your life in the way of your balance between these two couple of hormones, well-being and stress, and to be the just middle to help yourself to heal.
All right. Could you please give us a brief description of how to actually apply each of the five?
Very easily. Breathing, Delta Breathing, I put Delta, it means the health tool. So Delta Breathing, it's very easy. You have to inspire, for example. You breathe in and breathe out with a specific rhythm. You have to breathe out 2 times more than you breathe in. For example, you breathe in 3 seconds, you breathe out 6. And it's not just very magic things. It's scientifically proven that when you change your rhythm of breathing, it will first change your acid alkaline balance of your blood. So change your ionic power of at the level of your cells, for example, calcium, lithium, etc. You boost the exchange of your cells, so you give more life to your cells. First point. Delta eating, maybe in 5 points, very easy. First, very free and very, very easy. More you chew, more you can cure easily, because when you chew, you put you change the food in small pieces. It's easier to be attacked by your enzymes, digestive enzymes, and more saliva you add in your all your digest foods. So more alkaline, because saliva is very, very alkaline, so it's good for digestion, and small pieces that even if you have a weak digestive system, you can digest this food. First one, take care of your glycemic index. Now everybody know what does it mean. Take care to the quick sugars and everything, all the sodas, cocas, and it's very bad because it's very acid. And inside you have for a lot phosphoric acids. It's just a poison, so it's just stupid drinks. You have to realize, if you are sick, that your first drink is just water or some specific herbal teas. And very easy to take care of your alkaline acid balance, and it's very easy too, very, very quickly. All the meats and saturated fats are acid, and vegetables and all the spices and condiments are basic with fruit also. And you have to have something like 70% of alkaline food and 30% of acid food. It seems complicated with a small board, a color board. In maybe 1 week, you can easily understand and apply the acid base balance and glycemic index care about your food. So it's very, very easy. So only with these few details, just it's very, very basic, you can change a little bit your diet. And as I said, if you target only your diet, these advices are not, it's not enough. But if you change a little bit the way you breathe, the way you eat, the way you detox is the third tool with some very, very, very well-known herbs. You have only 2 cups of these herbal teas just to help your liver, your kidneys, and your digestive system to be detoxed every day. It's very simple. You cannot cure a cancer with herbal teas. You cannot cure cancer with a different breathing system or a different eating way. But if you mix all this step-by-step self-healing, you will feel quickly better. And the fourth one, it's how to manage your thoughts. And we have created something called, it's a very well known, it's not a joke, but MIT, it means mental imagine training. And maybe in 1 week, you can put some pictures in your mind, 10 minutes twice a day with a breathing tool, and you put some pictures fitting with your life, positive pictures, and also it will change a little bit your life and step by step boost your self-healing process at the level of your cells. And the fifth one, as I said, I'm very proud of this one, because for the first four tools, it's easy to understand and to apply, because you control with your brain. You can decide to breathe, decide to change your diet, decide to detox your body, and decide to put new pictures of thoughts in your mind. But a lot of people are victims of our bad management of their emotional system. And unfortunately, it's quite impossible to manage your emotional system with your brain, because emotional system is above the brain. When you fall in love, you don't decide with your brain to fall in love. It's just an emotion that like a spring in your, it's something rushing in your all your body. So the difficulty of neuroscience tool, apply neuroscience tool, was to find a new path between left side of the brain and right side of the brain, to open a new door, giving the opportunity to open a discussion with your emotional problem. And we have worked on two main emotional problems. The first one is resentment, and the other one is anger, is hatred. It's correct word. It's correct, hatred. You understand what I mean?
Yes.
And we have discovered that when you cannot manage this kind of emotion, and day after day, month after month, year after year, you keep inside of you this kind of feeling, you will depress step by step your immune system and disbalance your hormonal system. And you open the door for all the chronic disease and all the inflammatory fields. So with 7 different specialties, psychiatrist, a neurobiologist, neurohormonologist, we have created a very simple tool through a written training. And you have only to write on a sheet of paper the purpose of your resentment or your hatred, and transform that. You make that during, for example, 1 week or 2 weeks. It depends of the strengths of your sufferers inside of you. And when you read a book in prose, you read with your left side of your brain. But when you read a poetry, you read it with the right side of your brain. You read, but not with the same side of your brain.
Fascinating. I really appreciate your insights. They align with many of the people in this audience, my own. The book is called Delta Medicine, Natural Therapies for the 5 Functions of Seder Health, and I appreciate you laying out in detail each one of those 5. And also you have, from what I understand, a 35-year history in neuroscience. For that, I would like to invite you back for an in-depth discussion, and Richard Gale, our producer, will align that for maybe an hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour, so we can go into reversing brain aging. We don't have time for that today, but I look forward to that follow-up conversation. And welcome to the United States. I know you're visiting from Paris, and it was our privilege to be able to film you for our new documentary on a PBS station and to have you in studio today. Dr. Jan Roger, my guest, R-O-U-G-I-E-R. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
You start yet.
Welcome all of you, I'm Gary Knoll. Now to our commentary from their calls and talkback. Our number to call in, 888-874-4888. We all will swallow a cup of corporate poison, according to Chris Hedges. We can take it from Nurse Romney, or we will, who will tell us not to whine and play the victim, or we can take it from Nurse Obama, who will assure us that this hurts him more than it hurts us, but one way or the other, the corporate hemlock will be shoved down our throats. The choice before us is how will it be administered? Corporate power, no matter who is running the ward after January 2013, is poised to carry out U.S. history's most savage assault against the poor and the working class, not to mention the Earth's ecosystems. And no one in power, no matter what the bedside manner, has any intention or ability to stop it. If you insist on participating in this cash-drenched charade of a two-party Democratic election, at least be clear about what you are doing. You are, by playing your assigned role as the Democrat or Republican voter in this political theater, you're giving legitimacy to a corporate agenda that means your own impoverishment and disempowerment. All of the things that stand between us and utter destitution. Medicaid, food stamps, Pell Grants, Head Start, Social Security, public education, federal grants and aid to America's states and cities, the women, infants, and children's nutrition programs, temporary assistance for the needy families, and home delivery meals for seniors are about to be shredded by the corporate state. Our corporate oligarchs are harvesting the nation, grabbing as much as they can, as fast as they can in the inevitable descent. We will be assaulted this January with automatic spending reductions referred to as the fiscal cliff. Begin to dismantle and defund some of our most important government programs. Mitt Romney will not stop it. Barack Obama will not stop it. And while Romney has been, courtesy of the magazine Mother Jones, exposed as a shallow hypocrite, Obama is in a class by himself. There's hardly a campaign promise from 2008 that Obama has not broken. This list includes his pledges to support the public option in health care. He didn't. Close Guantanamo. He didn't. Raise the minimum wage. He didn't. Regulate Wall Street. He didn't. Support labor unions in their struggle with employers. He didn't. Reform the Patriot Act. He didn't. Negotiate an equitable peace between the Israelis and Palestinians. Curb our imperial expansion in the Middle East. Stop torture. Protect reproductive rights. Carry out comprehensive immigration reform. Cut the deficit by half. Create 5 million new energy jobs. Halt home foreclosures. He did none of that. Obama's campaigning in South Carolina in 2007 said as president he would fight for the right of collective bargaining. Quote, I'd put on a comfortable pair of shoes myself. I'll walk on that picket line with you as president of the United States of America. End quote. That's what he said. But when he got his chance to put on those comfortable pair of shoes during labor disputes in Madison, Wisconsin, and Chicago, he turned his back on working men and women. Obama, while promising to defend Social Security, also says he stands behind the planned cuts outlined by his deficit commission, headed by Morgan Stanley's board member, Erickson Bowles, and former Senator Alan Simpson, a Wyoming Republican. The Bowles-Simpson plan calls for cutting 0.3 percentage points from the annual cost of living adjustment in Social Security program. The annual reduction would slowly accumulate. After a decade, it would mean a 3% cut. After two decades, 6% cut. The retirement age would be raised to 69, and those on Social Security who continued to work and made more than $40,000 a year would be penalized with further reductions. Obama's payroll tax cuts have, at the same time, served to undermine the solvency of Social Security, making it an easier target for the financial corporations that seek to destroy the program and privatize the funds. But that's just for starts. Cities and states are frantically starving for capital and staving off collapse. They cannot pay for most of the pension plans and are borrowing at higher and higher interest rates to keep themselves afloat. The county's 19,000 municipalities face steadily declining or stagnant property tax revenues, along with spiraling cost. Annual pension payments for state and local plans more than doubled to 15.7% of payrolls last year. That's a 6.4% increase. The costs of our most basic needs, from food to education to health care, are at the same time being pushed upward with no control or regulation. Tuition and fees at four-year colleges climbed 300% in just the last 20 years, fueling the college loan crisis that has left graduates, most of them unemployed or underemployed, with more than $1 trillion in debt. Healthcare costs over the same period have risen 150%. Food prices have climbed 10% since June. According to the World Bank, there are now 46.7 million Americans and 1 in 3 children who depend upon food stamps. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency under Obama has, meanwhile, expelled 1.5 million immigrants, a number that dwarfs deportations carried out by his Republican predecessor. And while we are being fleeced, the Treasury Department Federal Reserve Bank has given $16 trillion to national and global financial institutions and corporations, but not a penny to the average American. Fiscal implosion is only a matter of time, and the corporate state is preparing. Obama's assault on civil liberties has outpaced that of George Bush. The refusal to restore habeas corpus, the use of Authorization to Use Military Force Act to justify the assassination of U.S. citizens, the passing of FISA Amendments Act to monitor and eavesdrop on every possible American without a permit or warrant, the employment of the Espionage Act 6 times to threaten whistleblowers inside the government with prison time, and the administration's recent emergency appeal of U.S. District Judge Catherine Forrest's permanent injunction of Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act gives you a hint of the shackles the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, intend to place on those who contemplate dissent. But perhaps the most egregious assault will be carried out by the fossil fuel industry. Obama, who presided over the repudiation of the Kyoto Accords and has done nothing to halt the emissions of greenhouse gases, reversed 20 years of federal policy when he permitted the expansion of fracking and offshore drilling. And this acquiescence to big oil and big coal, no doubt useful in bringing in campaign funds, spells disaster for the planet. He has authorized drilling in federally protected lands along the East Coast in Alaska and 4 miles off Florida's beaches. Candidate Obama in 2008 stood on the Florida coastline and vowed never to permit drilling there. And you get the point. Well, Obama's not in charge. Romney would not be in charge. Politicians are the public face of corporate power. They are the corporate employees. Their personal narratives, their promises, their rhetoric, and their idiosyncratic behavior are meaningless. And that, perhaps, is why the cost of the two presidential campaigns will be $2.5 billion. The corporate state does not produce a product that is different. It produces brands that are different, and the brands cost a lot of money to sell. You can dismiss those of us who will be in protest vote for a third-party candidate, invest our time and energy in acts of civil disobedience, and you can pride yourself on being practical. You can swallow the false argument of the lesser of two evils. But ask yourself, once this nightmare starts kicking in, who's the real sucker? Let us now go over and say hello to Lou Anne Panessi. And we're coming up to the end of our show. In fact, I don't think we're not going to have time in this segment. Let me just say that I thank all of you for every single day letting others know what our message is. Share the articles, 20 different articles that challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccines. They're up on our website. Articles against genetic engineering, over 200. Every day, dozens of articles are put up there that are in-depth from progressive researchers around the world. It is the one place with true progressive research can be posted and used and shared with others. And also, watch and then pass on The War on Health, a documentary for all of us. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you very much for listening. In our last 5 minutes here, we're going to say hello to Luann Panessi and any other calls that come through on our talk back segment. I had to do every day. I have to do a hard out to all the other stations around the country, because we have a lot that take our show, and they want us exact 55, but we have another 5 minutes to share. Some of the most interesting insights come in that 5 minutes. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I know that WBAI is very disappointed that they're not going to hear my voice today.
Yeah.
I'm going to remind you here that I'm the messenger, okay? And I know that it's so encouraging to hear how many people are starting to tune in and get the message. I have an email here that says, I'm a friend of yours from a long time ago. He says, my friend's brother used to work for you. And he says, and in my opinion, in most everyone's opinions, he's mean-spirited and manipulative and obviously very, very dysfunctional. He says, I was listening to you recently, and you said you were a magnet for people with dysfunctional behavior. And his question to you is, why did you allow him into your life and into your workspace? And how is it that we can avoid dysfunctional people? And how is it that you allow dysfunctional people in your life and in your workplace? He says, his own brother doesn't even speak to this guy.
I think I know who you mean, but I can't be absolutely certain. Voltaire said, the progress of rivers to the ocean is not so rapid as that of man to error. If it is the person I'm thinking of, and this man was in our running and walking club and just as nice a human being as you ever meet, and he asked me, would I be able to have a place for his brother who's going through a rough time. And I thought about it, and I said, as long as he can be responsible, I'll keep on it. And because I was in FEC at that time. I was building my home in Florida. And so for about a four-month period, his brother moved in to my home out at Lake Pakong and lived there. And when I went back, I found that there was a lot of problems that he had created. And as a result, I asked him to leave, and his brother was very disappointed, but I didn't blame the brother. Throughout my life, I've made two important error lessons that I try to share with other people. If someone comes into your life with a lot of dysfunction, and let's say it's hidden, you don't know the real motives for being with you or in your life, or you don't know things about them that would make you have a different opinion, sooner or later they're going to surface. The more time you spend with someone, the more likely you are to see the full person. And then you have to weigh what you can agree that is not in alignment with you, but it's not bad. You just have different beliefs. Most of my friends and I have different beliefs on religion, on diet. You ought to see my friends go to dinner with me. You know, they're not into health. You would think they would be, but they're not. But that's their right, and I never criticize that. They eat the food they want, I eat the food I want. It's other things we enjoy each other's company. So then in balance, I can say I disagree with things about someone, but it's okay. You know, it's their right, as long as what we do share is very positive. That is different than someone who does something that's negative with malice aforethought or is manipulative or lies or deceives, someone who is toxic, because that doesn't change. And one of the lessons that I learned was that I can't change people no matter what I do for them. And I've made the mistake, and I have to own that energy of giving people access to my home. I've let people who were alcoholics or drug addicts detox and gave them lots of my time and energy and insight. And in the end, they went right back, you know, to the way they were. And that's where they are today. People were angry then. They're angry today. I wished I could say that people I spent a lot of time and energy trying to help changed. I'd be lying. And I haven't helped any of them. Not one. But today is different. Today is I don't allow those people in my life. If you're toxic, if you're negative, you're angry and bitter, you're not going to be in my life. You're not going to be in my home. You're not going to be in my environment. If you can listen to me on the radio, fine. Read a book, fine. If you get something from a lecture, fine. But that's as far as it goes. But how many people I allowed access to the inner sanctum of my being only to have them exploit that? That was a lesson. And in conclusion, it was a lesson that my mother told me earlier in life I would have to learn. And it happened this way. We lived on a simple block like everyone else in my middle-class community. Every block was nice. Of the nicest homes and nicest backyards were always the older people because they were more patient and knowledgeable about gardens. And the rest of us just had regular backyards, regular homes, little homes. And it was a nice neighborhood to grow up in and live in. But there was one house that always seemed broken down and always seemed to get some bad people into it. And this one family moved in, and my mother said, go over and invite them to dinner. No one else, none of my other friends, would have anything to do with them. It's all there from the other side of the tracks, you know. So I went over there, and there's this guy named Dwayne. And he was in the same grade we were, but he was older because he'd been held back. And so he came over to dinner. You know, he didn't have the same kind of upbringing the rest of us had. And my mother said, I sense that his energy is very good, and don't judge him because of his background and the stigma around it like your neighbors would. And so we became friends. Nicest guy. And yet his brother was just the opposite and would do anything against anyone he could. It taught me a lesson that I'm not going to judge someone because of the circumstances they have been in up to that point. I'm going to judge someone based upon what they do when you give them an opportunity, either to be your friend or to help them or to give them an opportunity. Either they will use the best that they are and manifest in a higher level of self, or they will not. And if they don't, it is not for me or you or anyone else to be there as a, you know, as learn, paying for their lessons. And that is an important lesson to learn. The people I do help, the people who do change, are the people who come with an open mind to change, who have a real desire to be the best they can be. And those, Luann, those are in the tens of thousands who have come. And they have been able to take what lessons they've learned and become better people and a better part of society because of it. So we can either focus upon the few that really were never going to change and simply exploited the opportunity, or those who were appreciative of the opportunity and became better people because of it. So I learned the one lesson. Use my intuition. Use the gift my mother gave me as a sensitive. But I also see what happens when people who are really wanting to be good people and willing to do whatever it takes and be disciplined in it, they make it a better world. Okay?
Sure.
Yeah, and I'm not even aware that that is the same person, but that was the one that caused the most problems because I trusted him living in my home for 4 months without any supervision, and man, they trashed it. I mean, trashed it. I had to redo everything all over again once they left. Anyhow, that's the lesson. Thanks a lot for your call. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Now, talk about a program that's got numbers. Whoa. Utrice Lead, growing every single day in listenership because she brings something that is warm, engaging, intelligent, progressive to the airwaves. The Utrice Lead Show, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, starting right now.